And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
What's good, everybody? It's been a minute. Pete Jensen and Nick Alberga back with you, NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're recording this episode on Monday, July 18th, and really excited here to wrap up all the free agent signings, a ton of big trades this offseason, and then some implications from the NHL draft. What's going on, Nick? How you been?
Not too much. A minute feels like months since the last time we've spoken. Yes. And the landscape, Pete, around the NHL has changed significantly. But without question, the biggest story, Johnny Hockey. Did you see that coming?
No. In fact, I mean, I wanted to give a shout out to Jarmo Kekäläinen for making something like that happen, because let's be honest, in all the major sports out there, you would never see something like this happen in baseball or basketball, right? I mean, like a smaller market team usually isn't the destination. And to be honest, Columbus at the surface before free agency hit on that Wednesday, I thought that would have been one of the last teams on the planet that Johnny Gaudreau would have ever ended up with. We were talking about him maybe going home and stuff like that. You know, it's up for debate what it does for his fantasy value, but let's just say first and foremost, it makes the Blue Jackets a major player in the Metropolitan Division once again, and it boosts their offensive appeal, power play, top line, you name it, across the board, Nick.
Look, let me get this out of the way first. The city of Columbus is one of my favorites. Anybody who's listened to me the last couple of years knows that. Loved All-Star a couple of years back, so I hate people slagging on that market. It's great to see these type of teams land these type of players. Having said that, I still view the pickup as a bit of a head scratcher because I don't think Columbus is ready to compete just yet. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be maybe more so legitimate in year 4, 5, 6, and 7 of Johnny Gaudreau in that contract, which means he's going to be 4 years older, right? I think from a fantasy perspective, it's great for the value of guys like Laine, assuming he re-signs, Zach Werenski, Elvis Merzlikins. I still have major league wonders, Pete. Is Elias Lindholm in Columbus? Because I can't find him.
Yeah, good.
Where's
point.
The center coming from?
You know? If he wants to win championships, he was a part of maybe, you know, the best line in the league, arguably last year with Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk. He hit 115 points. Tkachuk hit 100 points. I mean, that line was potent, to say the least. And now he goes to Columbus, where you mentioned Patrick Laine was a point per game player this past year. He had a nice bounce back and has an even higher ceiling. Could be a 40, 45 goal scorer playing with a guy that can dish like Johnny Hockey. But I have major questions about the center position. Like, I wanted to ask you, Nick, who do you think is going to be, for fantasy purposes, everybody wants to know who's going to be the guy that steps up and plays number one center? Is it going to be Boone Jenner, Jack Roslovic, one of the prospects like Kent Johnson? Or I know we saw a nice glimmer from Cole Sillinger last season. He had a hat trick and stuff like that. Who do you see stepping up and filling that void? Because I don't see an elite center on Columbus right now.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I think if you're expecting 115 points, 40 goals to Johnny Gaudreau, you're sadly mistaken. I think I had to push him down my top 250, quite frankly, and that's just being honest about it. I think that was my wonder. I think you start with Roslovic. I think that's the first goal right there. Boone Jenner's coming off a really, really good year, but he's more of like a shutdown type center. I don't think you're putting him with your top talent. And then, as you mentioned, Johnson and Sillinger are really, really raw at the NHL level. So, like, when analyzing, you know, what this meant to the fantasy value of Johnny Gaudreau in Columbus, you just can't view it as the same or even in the same ballpark as it was in Calgary because of who was around him. So I think we're going to see a bit of a dip, but I think ultimately it helps others around him more than maybe it did in Calgary. Would you agree with that, Pete?
Yeah. And, you know, looking back to Calgary, it's interesting to see where they'll go from here. They still have 2/3 of that top line. Who's going to step up on the left side? Is it going to be a Tyler Toffoli? Is it going to be a Mangiapane or somebody else like Blake Coleman? Remains to be seen. Obviously, that whole team kind of dips down across the board, whether you're talking about futures appeal. They were a cup contender this past year. I don't think they're a cup contender anymore, but still, it's only one player. As big of an impact as Gaudreau had, the rest of that team isn't too shabby. So we'll see who steps up fantasy-wise. I definitely think I look at Toffoli a little bit better.
Yeah.
But back to Columbus, I think they're going to probably start the season with Boone Jenner as the number one center and then see who steps up from there. There are other guys. There's Johnson, who was the number 5 pick a couple of years ago. And then, of course, there's Liam Foudy, too. in the prospect pool there. So a lot of options for, you know, them to work with in Columbus that I think one of them should stick and maybe give them a higher ceiling. But I do think short term, for half of this season or more, you're going to see a lot of fantasy value from Boone Jenner, who covers hits, is coming off a career high in points per game, and also a couple of years back had 30 goals. So he has a pretty high floor and a very high ceiling if he's playing with Laine and Gaudreau.
Without question, Pete, I think the biggest story in this offseason has been sort of the middling team and taking that next step. And with that in mind, the Ottawa Senators, Pete, how can you not be excited from an outside perspective, looking at what that team's done here in the offseason? You trade for Alex DeBrincat, you trade for Cam Talbot, you get rid of Matt Murray and Connor Brown. And oh yeah, you sign Claude Giroux. I think the fantasy appeal across the board, I think is obviously in the upswing for the Ottawa Senators. Do you feel the same way?
Definitely. I think you can look at them as a team ready to take the next step, ready and able to take the next step towards the playoffs as early as this season. If it started right now, I'd pick them to make the playoffs. I'm not sure if I'd pick them to make it over the Bruins or the Maple Leafs, but probably one of those teams, because that's how you would have to make room. But that speaks volumes about the type of caliber moves that they brought in here, right? Like Claude Giroux, as much as we're talking up the impact of Johnny Hockey in Columbus, I might rather have Claude Giroux on my fantasy team for the upcoming season if he's going to be playing with guys like Tim Stützle, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe on the top line with Norris and Brady Tkachuk. I mean, those are really stout fantasy players, fantasy and reality. And then you look at their goaltending situation. I think, they upgraded a little bit. They still have Forsberg with Talbot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good for Forsberg. It's good for Talbot. Like, you shouldn't be relying on Talbot to start 60 games for you. And you also shouldn't be relying on Anton Forsberg to start 40 or 50. So they might be able to find the balance and good enough goaltending to get back to the playoffs. So really impressive moves for Ottawa. And especially the fact that, you know, their owner passed away. You didn't really know like what the direction of the team was going to be. And I give them a lot of credit for going in as hard as they have in the free agent market and especially the trade market. DeBrincat is one of the best players in the whole league, and they got him for virtually nothing from Chicago.
It really has been a surreal story. And I just wanted to bring up as well, like, find me a player who has more upside in terms of sleeper value than Tim Stützle going into next season, at least right now, right? I think he's projected to play with DeBrincat and Giroux. I just think the depth is the bigger story for me in Ottawa, something I think they've lacked the last couple of years. They've really grabbed and looked at here in the offseason, and they're not done. Like, I fully expect them to pick up a defenseman. So you look at Ottawa from a fantasy appeal outside the normal and usual suspects. I think there's added value when it comes to Stützle and Thomas Chabot in the back end, Pete.
They're going to have two really good power play units. They're going to have Jake Sanderson on the second power play unit, probably with players like Drake Batherson and Tim Stützle, right? And then the first one's going to be loaded with, of course, Thomas Chabot. I think Thomas Chabot's probably one of the biggest teammate beneficiaries of any teammate across the league, with how his team has loaded up and gone from non-contender to potential contender this season. So yeah, I'm big on Chabot. And you mentioned Zach Werenski. They're both top 20 fantasy defensemen after their team's upgrades this offseason. So really good stuff there. Again, I think Ottawa, you can mention teams like Detroit and what they did, mm-hmm. and some other teams out there with their offseason improvements, but there's no bigger winner of the whole offseason so far than the Ottawa Senators, Nick.
No question. I think Bobby's dropping a flyer on Ottawa at plus 5,500, according to FanDuel. And if you want some Columbus, plus 7,500, who would you go with, Pete? Out of those two?
Ottawa. It's also a tough division, but the Metro is just, I don't really see many spots being up for grabs. Whereas, like I said, Boston, it has a ton of injuries, new coach. You don't know how that's going to work out. They brought in Jim Montgomery since we last talked. And then Toronto Maple Leafs, polarizing offseason. We knew that they had to make tweaks somewhere, either in the lineup, in the organization. They're sticking with the front office. They're sticking with the coach. They're sticking with the skater group for the most part, minus Ilya Mikheyev, who's going to be a big loss. And then you look at the goaltending, total overhaul, revamp, Nick. where this was a position with Jack Campbell when he was healthy, I didn't think it was necessarily a weakness. He went toe-to-toe with Andre Vasilevsky in the first round. What am I missing here? Two boom or bust options, Ilya Samsonov and Matt Murray. Do you like either of them? Because I don't like either of them, to be honest.
You know what's funny is Jack Campbell, you know, they didn't think he was good enough in Toronto, and he goes to Edmonton where they think he's the chosen one who's going to take him to the next level. Like, I just think right. In general, this goaltending carousel has been fascinating to document here in the offseason. I'm right there with you. For a team who thinks they're a Stanley Cup contender, who, by the way, hasn't won a series in 18 years, to put everything in the middle on Matt Murray, who won two cups like 5-6 years ago, and Ilya Samsonov, who was just non-tendered, that's a risky proposition, especially for a lame duck GM, sort of in the form of Kyle Dubas, who I think has to comprehend that if you don't win a series next year, you're finito. I don't care what your relationship is with anybody, including Matt Murray. That's a big time risk. But Pete, I just think she shows you, like, were there that many quality options out there? Like, quite frankly, I thought Alexander Georgiev might end up being the best goalie pickup of the offseason. But I think from the Toronto perspective, I don't think it was that great of a move on either front.
Right. And there was Darcy Kemper going to the Capitals, and Kemper was coming off the Stanley Cup in a really good regular season with tied for the third best even strength save percentage in the league. So Colorado is now going to go with Georgiev, younger guy, and of course, Pavel Francouz. So it's going to be a different look there as well. But yeah, to answer your question, I think that the biggest offseason goalie mover in terms of how highly we have them ranked is Jack Campbell going to the Edmonton Oilers, where they haven't had a goalie in ages since really that year that Cam Talbot had like 40 wins for them a number of years ago. So it's a big upgrade for Edmonton over Mike Smith and Koskinen. And I really like their futures appeal. When I look at the odds board here and I see Toronto with the second shortest odds to win the Stanley Cup, I'm just not seeing it. I really like some of these other teams that we've mentioned, including Edmonton. I think Edmonton has a better chance to hoist the Stanley Cup than Toronto does. Let me know if you disagree, but something seems a little out of whack there.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, I've asked people this before, because I think if you notice every time these boards come out, Toronto's near the top. I think it's where the money's coming in. So they have to do something about it. And that's probably your answer, because I agree with you. And my only thing I'll say about Jack Campbell, I would wonder immensely about somebody who has confidence issues being your goalie when it matters most, because every game after a loss, he surrenders a bad goal or surrenders a goal. He apologizes for letting that goal. And I think you have to have thick skin as a goalie. And I don't know if Jack Campbell has the resolve to be an elite goaltender in this league, because he struggles with confidence issues. And I know every goalie does, but it's, you know, it really, really, really becomes clear. And then on top of that, Edmonton's a market that's been looking for a goalie for a long, long period of time. So I hope that marriage works out, but I'm with you on Edmonton. I think especially there's more of a path in the Pacific. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the LA Kings got a little bit better. We actually haven't broken down the Kevin Fiala trade since we last spoke at the very end of the postseason. Kevin Fiala goes to LA and boosts the Kings' overall outlook, signs a 7-year deal, so has a lot of keeper and dynasty league appeal as well. But Calgary takes a big step back, losing Johnny Hockey. Yes. Vegas takes a big step back, even though I still view them as a cup contender, trading away Max Pacioretty for absolutely nothing just because it was a salary cap dump is going to make that team a lot worse. Their top line left wing spot is a gaping hole right now in Vegas. So yeah, I agree with you. Edmonton definitely has the path to come out of the Pacific and get back to the Western Conference final like they made it to this year. And Mike Smith was the weak point this year. They had Darnell Nurse banged up. They're bringing back Evander Kane. I really like that signing and just kind of sticking with what already works and then improving in your biggest area of weakness. So I'm all in on Edmonton this year.
And don't forget about the progression and the hope of Dylan Holloway being a full-time National Hockey League next year, potentially playing on that third line. So I actually had Edmonton as one of my winners. I think you look at the Pacific, I think clearly there's opportunity. And I think any middling team in the NHL is looking for that. Who has the better opportunity to maybe get into a playoff spot or hover around? Is it LA or is it Anaheim with their offseason moves so far?
I like LA a lot more. The fact that LA made it this past year and challenged Edmonton the way they did without Drew Doughty, without Victor Arvidsson. Now they add even more firepower in Fiala. Fiala was top 10 in the NHL in even strength points, by the way, with Frederick Gaudreau as his line mate. Absolutely no disrespect to that breakout player, but no, I'd rather be playing with Anze Kopitar, right, on both ends of the ice to help my overall stats and especially my offensive capability. Kopitar pass first, and Fiala definitely a finisher, one of the better players in the league. I'm looking for him to hopefully find a little bit more consistency. There were two different seasons where Fiala was producing at an elite level in the second half of the season, but really started the season slow. Maybe Kopitar can help him, Nick, find that consistency to play elite the entire season. So that's the only thing that's been lacking for him. And then you look at Minnesota, that's another team that took a step back with Matt Boldy coming off a rookie sensation season. He loses his trusted line mate in Fiala. So I think you got to look at him, at least for this upcoming season, a little bit differently in Mini.
I was laughing that it was July 17th and seemingly, you know, Bill Guerin's offseason is complete. No UFAs, no RFAs. He's got a couple guys he can extend if he wants, and one in the form of Matt Dumba. Obviously, that's a big one, but he's done a lot of heavy lifting. And I was just curious to get your opinion on everything that broke down with Cam Talbot. We didn't expect this at all. Like, that was obviously one of the best tandems in the league following the trade from Chicago to Minnesota for Marc-Andre Fleury. And I have some doubts, I won't lie now, about Filip Gustavsson being the backup. What does he have, 27 games of NHL experience? He's 24. And you're putting a lot of strain on Marc-Andre Fleury, who is obviously in the twilight of his career, Pete.
It's a big step back for Minnesota. We know that the buyouts are kicking in for Parisi and Suter. It's an unfortunate reality. Of course, you know, a team like Dallas is a fringe playoff team. A team like Winnipeg is a fringe playoff team. Nashville's not going away. They're sticking with their win now mentality. They got a better defenseman in Ryan McDonough this offseason. Chicago and Arizona are at the bottom of the standings in that division. Colorado's at the top. After Colorado, I don't think like a team like Minnesota is the second best team anymore. There's also St. Louis. I think St. Louis, who beat Minnesota, is a lot better on paper than Minnesota is right now for next season. And then, yeah, teams like Winnipeg and Dallas that had coaching changes, I think, move a slight step up for the upcoming season, maybe. And then, of course, slight step down at the very least for Minnesota, who's now going to rely on an aging Marc-Andre Fleury to shoulder a really heavy workload. I'm talking 50-plus games that you would expect from Marc-Andre Fleury at this stage of his career is a little dicey, Nick.
And anybody listening, again, we will preface in saying it's about mid-July and a lot can change over the next couple of weeks. We will go dark for a couple of weeks and a lot can change. It's early on in the offseason, just our, you know, analysis and how we see things playing out. I want to bring up Colorado, Pete. They're actually on my winners list. I like the work Joe Sakic has done here in the offseason. You re-sign Val Nichushkin, Josh Manson, Cogliano, Darren Helm. You go out there, a cheeky pickup of Alexander Georgiev, who's finally getting an opportunity. You re-sign him. He's now in a tandem with Francouz. And then they're all around some other free agents, namely that Nazem Kadri guy, again, who we talk is still available. Like, I think the body of work has been so, so impressive by Joe Sakic. Do you agree with that?
It has been. I mean, they're likely losing Kadri, but they have the guys that can fill that spot, right? They have Newhook, who has been underutilized, even though they won the cup and they made the second round the previous year when he was a rookie. I look for him to step up by association to Kadri's likely departure in free agency. We're still not sure where he's going, but we'll see. Hopefully find out soon. And then, you know, you look at the defense on that team. They won the cup without Sam Girard for the last couple of rounds. They still have Devon Taves with Cale Makar. They still have Bowen Byram, who's a budding star on defense, and still some of the other older guys like EJ. So they got a great outlook. And for Georgiev, I mean, what do you think? You think he's going to be the definite starter compared to Francouz, or is it going to be more of a timeshare? I think you're going to be able to get good value based on ADP for Georgiev, because I don't think a lot of people out there, even though he moves to Colorado, I don't think people are going to be taking this guy in the top 100 overall. So it's a good spot to pick him up as maybe your third goalie in fantasy. or second goalie and get some big rewards based on ADP.
Where do you have Georgiev right now in your rankings?
He's like top 20, I think. We have him not quite top 15 because he has a lot to prove, I think.
Yeah.
He's stepped up in big ways for the Rangers through the years. When Shesterkin was injured, he played pretty admirably. We have Georgiev 19th, right behind guys like Jonathan Quick and Cam Talbot. You can make the argument that maybe he could be ahead of those guys, but you know, I'm not taking a Georgiev over a Connor Hellebuck or someone of that ilk. So I still think he's somewhere in that 15 to 20 range among fantasy goalies, but with a very high ceiling when you look at the supporting cast in Colorado. And I do think maybe even if they don't win the cup again as back-to-back champs, they're still going to be one of the top five teams in the regular season. And they're still going to go to at least the second or third round, even if they bow out next postseason.
And obviously you place a lot of value in fantasy on wins, and a lot of these goalies picked up will get that. I think I agree with you on Georgiev. I think a timeshare makes the most sense considering he really hasn't proven anything as a number one. And clearly they think highly of Pavel Francouz to move on from two number one goaltenders, obviously in the last couple of years, in Grubauer and Kemper. So look out for that. Some other names I want to throw out there, like Darcy Kemper signs at Washington, as we mentioned. How about Vitek Vanacek in that pickup? Like, I'm not crazy about what the Devils have done so far. I know they've, you know, addressed some needs. You know, I like the Marino pickup. Andre Palat's going to help the top six. But to go with Vanacek and Mackenzie Blackwood, is that what we're looking at right now, Pete?
Yeah, it's probably going to be a pretty heavy workload for Vanacek if you're in a league that counts saves and, you know,
That's scary, starter volume.
I don't know how many wins he's going to get you. Maybe 25 or so, even if he's a workhorse. But, you know, the Devils get a little better. Andre Palat, I'm high on that player, even though he's going away from a championship team and going to a rebuilding team. I think he's going to put in some dirty work on a line with Jack Hughes, most likely maybe Nico Hischier. Remember, Hischier was a big breakout player in the second half last year, producing about a point per game, and Jack Hughes had the full-fledged breakout himself. So really good company for Palat to be in. I just look at Palat and Vanacek and Marino as helping the Devils at least become more competitive. They should be in the playoff picture. I don't think they're going to make it just because the division's so crowded. But am I leaning more towards teams like the Devils and the Columbus Blue Jackets compared to the teams like the New York Islanders and Philadelphia Flyers? Yes, I am. I think those first two teams I mentioned are a lot better after all these offseason moves.
So the goaltending, Pete, we talk about the carousel. I know you love tandems. I'll name the tandems and you tell me what ones you have think improve the most of these teams. So Colorado with Georgiev and Francouz, Washington Kemper and Charlie Lindgren, 5 games of NHL experience. He gets a 3-year contract, just over $3 million. So congrats to him. You got to love to see that. Vanacek and Blackwood in New Jersey, Campbell, and it looks like Stuart Skinner is going to be the backup with the Edmonton Oilers. Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov in Toronto, Ville Husso and Alex Nedeljkovic in Detroit, Cam Talbot, Anton Forsberg in Ottawa, and Marc-Andre Fleury and Philip Gustafson in Minnesota. Which ones of those do you like the most?
I like the Ottawa one the most. I'm glad you brought up Detroit because that's another team that made an array of moves. They traded for Ville Husso at the draft. I thought that was a sneaky move. We liked Nedeljkovic. We liked him with the Hurricanes. We know the situation he was put in for this past season, but I still like that player, and I really like that tandem as a big upgrade from a couple of years ago when they had, like, what, Thomas Greiss and Jonathan Bernier. I think that's going to help Detroit. Same type of deal. Stay in contention. Do they have the edge over a team like Buffalo? I think they do after getting, like, David Perron, Andrew Kopp, Dominic Kubalik. These are high-quality players to play on their second line, second power play, however you slice it. So, and I think as long as the Red Wings are healthy, if they have a key injury or two, they might be one of the worst teams in the league once again. But I really don't think they will be if they stay remotely healthy for the upcoming season. I see the Red Wings as being a fringe playoff team. If they don't make it this year, Stevie Y will probably make the necessary tweaks for them to make it the following year. This team, this franchise is going to be a force to be reckoned with once again very soon, probably in the next year or two, Nick.
Taking steps for sure. You know how I feel about David Perron. I love that fit in Detroit. I just want to say this adds a lot of value, I think, in fantasy to Jacob Vrana. It'll be Vrana, Kopp, and Perron likely on line two. I think there's a lot of value stemming in Detroit. Could probably use a power play quarterback still. Obviously something they're looking at. And they will address over the next couple of years outside of Sider, of course. But I think adding to the back end will be huge and adding some depth there. Is it me or is Buffalo sneakily positioning itself to be in the Michkov-Bedard conversation next summer, if you know what I'm saying, Pete? Because I think we just mentioned it. We both agree Ottawa's better. We both agree Detroit's better. Buffalo, they really haven't improved, but I don't know if, you know, where they're going to sit themselves in the Atlantic Division. And quite frankly, I think they're okay with that. I just think you look at their offseason moves, especially in between the pipes. And I got a lot of questions, Pete.
Definitely. I like Ukko Pekkalukkanen. He's not quite there yet as a top level starter in the NHL. We all know that. He was banged up for a lot of last season. I think it's interesting that they brought back Craig Anderson, and they're going to probably give UPL the platform to show what he can do at the NHL level. And instead of wasting money on a goaltender that might be fool's gold, they're going to see what they have in this kid. And then they have that Devon Levy eventually coming up the pipeline. We'll see if and when that happens. Not going to be for this season, though. He's going back to college. So they're kind of play with this season and use it as a building block. If they take another step forward, they could address things appropriately. But if they are a bad team again, they could get a great player in next year's draft. Everybody's saying next year's draft is a lot better than this year's. So if they're shifting their mentality to, you know, appropriately for that, I like that stance for Buffalo because they do have one of the best prospect pools in the whole league, but they can't rush this thing, right? They have to be cautious. Pete, it's been like 30 and they have to do it the right the way playoffs. If they're going to hit the ceiling.
It's been like 30 years since that team made the playoffs, it feels like. When are they taking that? I don't know. I think the most polarizing story of the offseason for me was Matt Murray giving the old Dikembe Mutombo to going to the Buffalo Sabres, which sets Ottawa up to deal that pick to get Alex DeBrincat. Like, it's amazing how things work out, because if they make that trade, they probably don't get DeBrincat, right?
Right. I think that was a good move for Buffalo to not trade for Matt Murray.
He said no.
No, I mean, but I think it just is going to work out for them in the future for that didn't happen for Buffalo. They're not close. Were they closer with how the momentum turned last year, how they finished the season strong, young players showing some potential? Absolutely. I think they'll have some fantasy value this upcoming season with Dahlin and Tuck and some of these other guys, maybe a deep sleeper like Peyton Krebs. But again, and if we see Paterka or Jack Quinn, like, I'm excited about those players individually, but collectively, they're still a year away. And I think the moves for teams like Ottawa and Detroit kind of make that even more of a reality. So, you know, where a team like the New York Islanders, I think you could call them one of the losers of the offseason so far, because they stood pat. They didn't do anything to improve their roster. They're supposed to be somewhere between fringe playoff team and cup contender, where Buffalo is not in that conversation. I think the Islanders kind of missed out on a lot of opportunities, whereas Buffalo's rebuilding the right way. They're staying patient here.
Who gets booed more next year on the island? Is it John Tavares or Johnny Gaudreau, Peep?
Probably John Tavares, but I think it's crazy how that played out, right? It seemed like teams like the Islanders and Philly and New Jersey were in the mix. I guess Philly couldn't make the cap space to sign him, which is honestly just sad because they've made some moves the past couple of years for questionable players. And they're going to go into the season with Tony DeAngelo and John Tortorella on the same team, something that I don't know that there's many scenarios where that would work out. We'll see if they prove me wrong, but I don't like that move on paper. I didn't like the Ristolainen move from last year, whenever it was. And that is the valuable cap space that you could have used to bring in Johnny Hockey to change the course of your franchise. So just a little disappointed in the Flyers and the direction they're headed here.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So I got a couple of quick hitter questions for you. Multiple choice, okay? So we'll start with this one. Which mid-tier forward stands to gain the biggest boost with the move to a new team? So I have three guys, three options. Two are on the same team. Connor Brown with Washington. We know Tom Wilson's hurt, so he could be on the top line with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov. And you know how I feel about contract years. Dylan Strome with Washington. Backstrom's out, so Mantha and Oshie could be his line mates. Or Kirby Dach. You and I were both at the draft. We'll talk about that coming up. But there was a, you know, people didn't really know who the player was in the Bell Center when they acquired him. I love the pickup. I think he was primed for a new opportunity, and he has, you know, opportunities, the name of the game in Montreal. So Connor Brown, Dylan Strome, or Kirby Dach, who would you pick?
I think the short term stopgap perfect scenario is Dylan Strome. If he's playing with guys like TJ Oshie and Anthony Mantha while Nicholas Backstrom is rehabbing. I mean, it sounds like Backstrom's going to come back again. He's not retiring or anything like that, but it's a significant injury for that. So many years now, the top two centers are solidified with Kuznetsov and Backstrom, not so much for the upcoming season. You're going to see a lot of guys, Connor McMichael, Dylan Strome, yeah, Hendrix LaPierre, right? They're going to be like a lot of guys fighting for that number two center spot. I think they start with Strome. Strome played great with Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat. Those guys have been putting up monster numbers for years, and Strome was in the middle of it. So it's actually one of the best scenarios for Dylan Strome. So I think in the short term for fantasy, it's Dylan Strome. And then, you know, beyond that, remains to be seen. But I really like that sneaky signing for Washington, because Washington, they could never rebuild or retool really with Ovechkin on that team. So they did the best thing they could. They got a viable number two center in Dylan Strome, and they got a clear number one starter in Darcy Kuemper. When Kuemper is healthy, he's a top 10, 15 fantasy goalie. No questions asked anymore, whether he was with Arizona or Colorado. So it's a nice job by Washington to stay relevant in a very tough division.
I'm going to go with Connor Brown. He had 21 goals a couple of years ago. We had 10 last year. I just like players with opportunity, and I like the fact that Wilson's going to be out for a while, and I like the fact that it's a contract year for Connor Brown. So certainly look at those two players. Which defenseman stands to gain the biggest boost from the move to a new team? I think we both know where we're going to go with this answer, but I wanted to throw it all together. Brent Burns with Carolina, Jeff Petrie with Pittsburgh, John Marino with the New Jersey Devils.
I like the trade for Brent Burns. I'm a big Burns guy. I've had him in fantasy many times, even the past couple of years when Carlson has downgraded and fallen out of fantasy relevance and the Sharks have become one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, Burns still had like a 54-point season and was top 15 in the league in defenseman scoring. So put him out there on the power play with Svechnikov, Max Pacioretty, Turbo Teravainen, and Sebastian Aho. I love that spot for him. We just saw Tony DeAngelo put up top 10, 15 fantasy defenseman value when he was healthy this year. So Brent Burns, I think, is back into that top 10, top 15 fantasy defenseman realm for the rankings. And I think with some questions being number two center for Carolina, other than that, this has to be one of the most likely teams this upcoming season to actually win the Stanley Cup. Carolina Hurricanes. I love what they did with Pacioretty and Burns, bringing in two veterans who still have a lot to offer here.
And odds makers feel the same way. Just looking at the Stanley Cup odds right now on July 17th, Carolina plus 1,000. That's the second best aside from Colorado at plus 500. I'm with you. Like, I love what Carolina did, and they were off the radar until like a span of 2 hours on free agent frenzy. The first day of free agency where everything exploded. How in the world do you get Max Pacioretty, still for my money, a bona fide sniper in this league, going into a contract year for nothing? I think that's one of the bigger steals of this offseason, Pete. And it's one thing that Carolina has been lacking for so long outside of Svechnikov is like that hired gun. How many big time goals has Max Pacioretty scored? He's been a captain in this league. He's been a seasoned pro for many, many years. I just like that fit. And I just think it adds a different dynamic to that top six. But as we mentioned earlier on, there are some question marks when it comes to the 2C. Obviously, Vinny Trocheck's now on Broadway. Can Jesperi Kotkaniemi, the former teammate of Max Pacioretty in Montreal, can he elevate to the 2C role?
We'll see. If he can't, then it'll probably be Jordan Staal's axe to grind. We'll see what happens. I think they're still equipped. You look back, I think 2 years ago, I know you liked them this past year. to get to the Cup final. 2 years ago, I liked them, and their goaltending was pretty bad compared to what it is now. That's right, the now question. They have Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta. 2 years ago, they had James Reimer and Peter Mrazek. I mean, that is night and day. And then you look at their defense with two workhorses and Brent Burns and Jacob Slavin. Again, the D'Angelo thing was a nice experiment. They won that signing by a mile, but they shipped him off for some picks, and they're moving forward. I think they need, you know, they've failed in the playoffs a couple of years now. I'm surprised when you look back at it that Carolina has not made the Final Four yet under Rod Brind'Amour. I think that's bound to happen. It's almost overdue to happen. So, yeah, and Carolina lost Game 7 at home to the Rangers this year without Freddie Anderson, with injury during the game to Seth Jarvis, who was their breakout rookie. So, to me, if that team is healthy, I don't see anybody beating them in the playoffs, out of the Metro Division at least next year.
It's scary when you look at the prospects of that top six, even guys like Jarvis in the top six. So the Brent Burns pickup, even Andre Kasha and Dylan Coughlin, who is like the, you know, the pickup alongside Pacioretty in the Vegas move. I just like the depth. And on Burns, like, one last thought, don't overestimate the fact that he gets to play with like a Jacob Slavin, right? And to be on that top pairing and to focus on just being a power play quarterback, I think is going to be huge for Brent Burns. And I think his career is going to be reinvigorated. You know, he had 54 points last year, but I think he still has a lot to give. Like, people are down and out on Brent Burns, but I think this change of scenery could be huge for him, Pete.
Yeah, there's definite ripple effect on Burns leaving. I think it's interesting for Erik Karlsson with some garbage time in San Jose. If he's healthy, he has power play one to himself now. So maybe he's like top 25 fantasy defenseman once again. The Sharks will be pretty bad this year, but you'll see a lot of value from Timo Meier, Logan Couture, Tomas Hertl, and of course, Erik Karlsson when he's healthy. So don't sleep on those guys. They're not going to be in contention by any stretch, but they're going to do a lot of fantasy damage in sneaky fashion. And then for Burns in Carolina, this guy was like top five in total and ice time, average ice time this past year. He's older, but he's in great shape. Downgrade his ice time a little bit, get a little bit more quality versus quantity, and you're going to see an explosive ceiling for Brent Burns, maybe even where he, you know, scores 20 goals again at the defenseman position and 65, 70 points. I think that there's a really high ceiling for Burns. You can make the argument that Burns is right up there with any player that has changed teams this offseason in terms of his ceiling. I think DeBrincat is the highest ranked player. Johnny Gaudreau and Jack Campbell and Claude Giroux close behind. But Brent Burns could outperform all of those guys fantasy-wise. And then when you look at position scarcity, that's why he has a chance to be the biggest mover of the offseason.
Certainly. And I think as we start to break things down more and dissect, I just want to reiterate my winners: Ottawa, Detroit, Carolina. I liked what Edmonton did, as we mentioned, Colorado. Yep. The losers, obviously, it's hard, and we have to preface by saying it's still early as we record this, but Calgary, you lose a star player. I'm sorry, you're going to be in that bubble. Toronto, a lot of teams handcuffed by the cap. Like, that's been my big, you know, storyline and narrative of this offseason thus far, is like the middling team getting better. But can we say any of the elite teams have improved, right, outside of the Carolina Hurricanes? And I think that's what you're going to get in a flat cap world. So the Islanders in that conversation. True. Vegas, and I still think Buffalo is a big loser, but I think they're positioning themselves for a superstar in the draft, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Vegas, I guess their hands were tied a little bit, especially having made the Jack Eichel trade. You had to be more committed to him. You're not trading Mark Stone, right? He's your leader. The goaltending is a little bit of a weakness, a little murky with the injury that could cut into the start of next season for Robin Leonard. So they just had to make a move. And unfortunately, Pacioretty, who you said is still elite, was the odd man out. And you look back at the past two seasons, they traded Fleury, they traded Pacioretty, and got absolutely zilch in return, literally.
It's crazy, man.
Just kind of sad. So, yeah, we'll see what they could do under Bruce Cassidy, but they definitely took a step back. My winners: Ottawa, Carolina, Edmonton, Detroit, and Columbus. My losers: Toronto, Philly, Calgary, Vegas, Islanders, and Buffalo, you know, if we're going to just rattle off everybody. So again, Ottawa, Do you think they're going to make the playoffs this upcoming season, Nick? I know I was saying I was trying to find room for them by maybe taking out Boston or Toronto, yeah. But do you think that's a reality, or is it kind of overhyped here in the off season where we have nothing else to do and we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit?
Probably a bit of that, to be honest. I tweeted this out on July 14th that it made me think a bit more about the Boston Bruins, Pete, than I did maybe the day previous when it came to free agency. And I think the teams that improved in the Atlantic Division. Boston's like a question mark for me because obviously there's some injury concerns and we think some, you know, extensions and re-signings are in a shelf somewhere. And I think they're going to be announced any day. But I just wonder if they can stay afloat with how much better, say, Ottawa and Detroit have become. So I can't go as far as to say that Ottawa is going to make the playoffs. I wonder about the back end. I know we're waiting for that next move. Maybe it's a Mackenzie Weegar. Maybe it's John Klingberg signing. I think Ottawa needs not one, but two defensemen to be a team that makes the Stanley Cup playoffs. How do you feel about them?
Right. It might depend. You know, we've seen a little bit from Brännström, not quite elite performance by any stretch. But if we get that from Sanderson, you could really see a big blow up in a good way for the Ottawa Senators. And I would say with relative confidence that either Ottawa or Detroit will make the playoffs this upcoming season. Okay. It's hard to pinpoint which, but I think that's a pretty good bet. If you could get their chances to add a plus number for either of those teams to make it, it's nice to dabble in a team like that because we saw it already from Raymond and Sider last year. And you're going to see more from Edvinson if he gets called up and makes his NHL debut, a former top pick in the draft from a couple years ago. So, and then still a lot more prospects to factor into the top nine forward group and still some other guys, right? Like even a Zadina, we haven't seen enough from him yet, but now a better supporting cast. Could Zadina blossom in a second or third line role? Absolutely. Could a player like Kopp make him a lot better if they play together? Absolutely. So a lot to look forward to for Detroit and Ottawa. And I think one of them gets in this upcoming season.
I'll just add that I think once there's expectation for you to do something, it just changes a bit and there's a bit more pressure. I think it's I don't want to say easy. It's still the NHL, but it's much more simpler to play when there's no pressure to succeed. But once that pressure is added, how are teams like Detroit and Ottawa going to react? And lastly, I want to finish up with just your overall assessment. You talk about blowups. You talk about Mishkov and Bedard. Chicago, my man, what's going on there? I think the writing's on the wall. I think Taves is going somewhere. I think Kane at some point in time, it just, something has to drop here. No,
you reminded me honestly, because it's become such an afterthought now because Chicago, I know they still have Kane and Taves, but that entire roster is done. I can't believe it. I mean, if you were going to rebuild, wouldn't you think you would rebuild around Kirby Doc and Alex DeBrincat, who are both 25 and under players who, you know, DeBrincat tied for sixth in the NHL in goals over the past two seasons combined and at 25 or younger. I didn't see the return in that trade. I was surprised that they would trade DeBrincat and Doc before they traded Patrick Kane, who is approaching an expiring contract, 2023 UFA. So yeah, the direction of the Blackhawks is kind of amiss right now. And
Bedard,
you could really say that they were the biggest loser of the offseason because they might be the worst team in the league this upcoming season, even worse than Arizona, who picked up a couple of nice centers in the top 11 of the draft. They have Keller, they kept Chychrun. Right. I mean, Arizona's even better than Chicago is right now.
Yeah. Don't forget to pick up a Patrick Nemeth too, right? From the New York Rangers. Can't forget that one for the Arizona.
Diamond in the rough.
Yeah. No, I think it was pretty profound. I just didn't like the fact that Chicago was talking for weeks and months how, you know, you got to have this great package to get Alex DeBrincat. And then it was like a deal like that that gets him. And I like a team like Ottawa getting him. I'm with you though. Like you're looking to rebuild, yet you're trading two guys who could be part of a rebuild and be your future and be your captains and all that. And you deal those guys and you don't even get the value in a trade. I think it's quite definitive what they're doing here. They're stripping it down. They want that top pick. They want a lottery pick next year. And from all the sounds of it, there's several generational potential players in that draft. So all the power to you, but the numbers are not in their favor when it comes to potentially landing that first overall pick. I just wonder, like, the Seth Jones pickup, man. I don't even know how you move that contract. Like, they still have players on that roster who can produce. But obviously, we saw what some of their offseason pickups, like Athanasiou and Max Domi. Like, you know, the goal here is to pick guys up, to prime them up, marinate them, and then deal them at the deadline, Pete.
And then on top of what I said with the trades of Doc and DeBrincat, you don't even qualify Dylan Strome or Kubalik. Kubalik, yeah. I know his past 2 years have been a little down, but he scored 30 goals as a rookie 3 years ago, and he's still young. I mean, that's another great pickup, savvy by Stevie Y to get him in free agency. And like we said with Washington, they got a guy that could play number two center in the short term, potentially long term for a contending team. And they won't take any step back, really, from Nicklas Backstrom being out for as long as he is. We'll see if it's any step back. If it is, it's probably not much of one. So, yeah, again, the direction of Chicago is a little puzzling. And one team that took advantage a little bit, it was a really interesting route, what they did in front of the home crowd at the draft. They took Slavkovsky over Shane Wright, shocked everybody. And then they traded for a center. So they passed on Wright, but they got Kirby Dach, who's young and big, 6'4", untapped potential. You got Suzuki and Dach up the middle. You got Slavkovsky and Caulfield on the wing, and Gallagher and Josh Anderson. So a pretty decent looking top six. And Montreal is, I think, a step behind a couple of those other teams we mentioned, Ottawa and Detroit, in their rebuild. But they got four guys 25 and under, 22 and under, actually, that will be major players in the years to come. So you got to applaud Montreal a little bit, Nick.
And I'm not sure if you're seeing this in stateside, but the rumors are picking up again when it comes to Pierre-Luc Dubois and the Montreal Canadiens. He's 2 years away from potential UFA. It's going to get louder and louder, I'm telling you. You know, it started with Jonathan Drouin all those years ago. He's getting into a walk year as well. I think Montreal's putting themselves in a position to bring Pierre-Luc Dubois home. It sounds like he wants to be a Montreal Canadian. And I'm with you. I think that's ultimately why I feel the way I do about the Buffalo Sabres. I think they're the worst team on paper in this division. I've never said that before in the last 15 years. So, like, it's the same old story for me. But I think in general, when I look back at this offseason, the Atlantic has drastically improved here, Pete.
Right. And I think you see playoff spots up for grabs, especially if the Leafs goaltending tandem is Samsonov, who had a great record in Washington, but never met expectations for his peripheral stats, save percentage, shutouts, goals against, stuff like that, all pretty weak across the board through his couple seasons down there. And Matt Murray had a couple of long losing streaks last year, had a nice stretch in between, but then got injured. So he has an injury risk. Samsonov doesn't seem to have, he hasn't taken that next step quite yet for a team that was grizzled in the Capitals and got through any adversity thrown their way past couple of regular seasons. Whereas the Leafs, I don't know that the Leafs are as good of a, as, you know, good of a team as Washington in terms of overcoming adversity and breaking through. So again, I think it's kind of a reach on either of those guys to expect them to lead you on a Stanley Cup run. Maybe even if things implode in the regular season, it could get ugly and they could miss the playoffs. That's like the reality for Toronto, that their floor is fairly low. They should still make it, but they might not if things go wrong for the goaltending.
Kyle Dubas's job is on the line profoundly. I'll leave with this. How many hot dogs steam A did you have at the Bell Center in Montreal? Tell me you had one at least. They're giving it out to the media like candy.
I did. Very good.
Thoughts?
The food was great in Montreal across the board. I had everything from Italian food to sushi to the poutine and
sushi
and burgers
in Montreal.
And everything. Yeah, it was really good. And the weather was beautiful. It's only six and a half hour drive from New York City. So anybody living in the Northeast should give it a shot. It's, you know, quick entry at the border, and it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. So yeah, again, Montreal, Ottawa, Detroit, the Atlantic Division is stacked. And other than teams like Tampa and Florida, I think some spots are up for grabs up there.
Pete, I can't believe how quickly this half season together has gone. It's been a fun off season. We'll see what happens, what transpires over the next little while. But certainly, I think it's time to tie a bow on this one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll have a lot more twists and turns. We mentioned Kadri's going to sign eventually. John Klingberg's going to sign. There might be another trades up some of these GM sleeve in the next couple of weeks, but we will take a break here for a couple of weeks. And then early August, we'll get back at you with like mock draft 1.0 and, you know, top sleepers and everything like that. Dropping a preview a week for the most part, leading up to the start of the season in early October. So, and things will hopefully be a little bit more on schedule this year. We hope so. It's going to be a really fun season, really fun buildup, and great to be back with you, Nick. So for Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you next time. NHL Fantasy on Ice. We appreciate you sticking with us. Leave us a review if you get a chance, and we'll talk to you on the other side.